Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. That rejoiner track is as dissonant and arrhythmic as the New York Jets offense was yesterday, Dom.
You just couldn't help yourself, hey, buddy?
I like to see my quarterback crawling on the ground like they've been playing with Legos for an hour.
Yeah.
Finally, we got a quarterback! This is our year!
I love how Jamie likes to talk smack, but like never reveals who he cheers for.
I don't have a favorite NFL team. It's great.
So
I'm impervious.
Yes,
you don't,
it is.
You're
everyone,
right. It's very convenient.
On
it's
everyone
amazing.
Else.
This is what happened to me, by the way. Like I used to be a pretty
Coward's
hardcore.
Way.
I used to be a pretty hardcore Raptors and Blue Jays fan, right? And those were like the teams I rooted for. I never really grew up having an NFL team. I wasn't like a Seahawks guy. I rooted for Doug Flutie. Like,
sure.
To be
sure.
Totally honest with you, I
as
was like,
you do.
So like, I really liked the Chargers for a bit, but like, anyway, I never really had an NFL team. And the Blue Jays have been such a letdown for
yes.
the last 2 years. And like, I really was like out on their core group midway through, not this summer, but last summer. And so I kind of began to tune out and just kind of watch baseball a little bit more indiscriminately. And then with the Raptors, I decided sort of at the tail end of or at the start of last season, like before the season had even begun, that why would I waste my time watching Raptors games when I think this team will be a joyless slog when I can watch the Oklahoma City Thunder and be really excited about. And then I watched like 30 Thunder games with my spare time and loved it. And so now my sort of tack is I've evolved beyond laundry.
Hold on.
Evolved.
So I've
when
evolved
Seattle
beyond
gets a team back, are you going to change allegiances again?
No, because I don't have allegiances to anybody. I didn't change allegiances. I just decided that I'd watch the team that I was
you
most interested in.
You shed your allegiance.
Yeah.
So you watch them, but you have no allegiance to them.
I like Shy. I like Jalen Williams, right? From
yes.
from Santa
sure.
Clara. WCC, baby.
Chet
Holmgren, WCC, yeah. baby. I'm into the WCC. That's my allegiance. So like really, I just sort of have decided that I'm going to follow like the teams, organizations, systems, players that I find most engaging and worthy of my investment as a sports watcher.
And your so investment is your sports book.
Well, partly, but like also my investment's just like what I want to watch
free time
on my free time. So that's how I've decided that I'm going to consume sports now. I've evolved beyond laundry.
That's me with the NFL. I am, and the NBA for that matter. I'm stuck with the Blue Jays. There's no shedding that loyalty for me. They're with me until I die,
yeah.
for better or for worse.
No, I'm kind of out.
Oh wow. All
yeah.
right. Well, good for you. Congratulations.
Well, Jimmy, you do
on
own
one.
The team partly.
That's right. Not me so much.
Well, if you have our Rogers stock, you do.
I like to think of them as my coworkers, my colleagues, my fellow Rogers employees.
Wow, just another handful of colleagues letting me down.
That's right, not pulling their weight around here. I'm used to it. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So we're done the preseason. Now we're in this, the calm before the regular season, right? Preseason schedule is wrapped up, although I think there might be one on the schedule tonight, which is absolutely wild from the NHL. But we're done preseason, right? We pretty, just one roster decision really left for the Canucks to make, which we'll find out in the next couple of hours here. But I do think we have a chance before we get into the regular season on Wednesday, and obviously the team will skate, and that'll be interesting tomorrow, we get a chance to pause here and just kind of look back from, even you can stretch it back to the young stars, but training camp certainly in Penticton, through to this point in the preseason. What have we learned? What are the kind of big picture takeaways that we can take away? That was horribly said. But anyways, what are the big picture takeaways we might have from the Canucks preseason now as we sit here just before the regular season comes around? And I do think, maybe big picture is putting it a little too grandly here, but just as we touched on the Nils Höglander contract extension in the first segment in the whiteboard, that has been one of the standout storylines for me, is just seeing him clearly elevate and graduate from kind of fringe player to trusted member of the team, a guy who you know is going, they view, I think, as somebody who can help them solve problems, right? Not something to be managed or hidden, but a guy they can really use proactively up and down the lineup. I think that is certainly a takeaway. I think the other one is just seeing at forward, certainly, the young depth step up, right? To the point where Phil DiGiuseppe was placed on waivers a lot earlier than I think we would have anticipated, where the final decision is coming down to Atu Ratu and Arshdeep Bains, right? You still have Linus Karlsson and Lekker Mäki in the AHL. And all of a sudden, I think this kind of vision that we know Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin had, and we can look back at their track record in Pittsburgh of, okay, having this pipeline full of young players ready to step in, you can see it kind of starting to take hold in the Canucks organization. When you think, Drance, from, again, you know, stretch it back to Young Stars or the beginning of main training camp in Penticton to this point, what are some of your takeaways from what we've seen from the Canucks so far?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of them. One is, you know, I think the way that this team is beginning to construct, you know, I don't want to say best practices, but almost like a way of doing business, I think is becoming sharper for us now that we've seen Rick Tocchet go through not just one, but two training camps. Now that Alvin and Rutherford are about to enter their third full cycle at the sort of helm of the team. Like, for example, I think this club has decided that they're going to have this real try-hard vibe, right? There's going to be a real business-like approach to how the Canucks do business. And that extends even to the point of being like, hey, we're going to go to this Penticton Young Stars tournament every year, and there's no trophy at the end. There's no playoffs like there is at Traverse. But we're going to try and win every game. We're going to bring a really good roster, and we're going to challenge some AHL vets to go there and be leaders, and we're going to weight their performance pretty heavily in determining what we're going to do at training camp, and there's going to be stakes even in that environment.
We're
going
to create the stakes for our players.
Heck yeah, we are. And then you see that sort of filter through kind of everything they do. Like, I'd even say, you're seeing it expressed in contracts, right? Now we're at a point where, like, Seelov signs for 2 years, and it's like, yeah, that's a part of how the Canucks do this. If you're a young player with promise that the club believes can contribute to the NHL level, but who hasn't shown it full time yet, your second contract is going to be a 2-year deal. A 2-year deal, we're not really going to, like, you know, push that hard. Like, we're not going to bend on this. We're doing a 2-year deal. It'll be a 1-way deal, but you're going to get a 2-year deal for your second contract. And we've seen them now do it with Rathbone, and we saw them do it with Podkolzin, even though they traded him. We saw them do it with Hoglander. We saw them do it with Seelov. Like, this is a philosophical approach. And what comes next, we're now sort of at the start of seeing it. The Hoglander $3 million, right, has the virtue, I think, not just of being a smart way of locking in the potential upside should Hoglander carve out a larger role on this team, which I think, by the way, you know, as much as I like Danton Heinen, right, as much as I like Daniel Sprong, as much as I like Kiefer Sherwood, if we get to mid-November and it's like, yeah, Hoglander's playing on the top line, Hoglander's clearly the best fit on the second line, is anyone going to be an inch surprised?
No, those opportunities are going to come for him. Like, it's just, we know how Rick Tocchet speaks about the whole idea of having duos and moving everyone else around. That's baked in. He's going to get those chances, and it's just a question of whether he makes the most of them and sticks. Yeah. But as you said, it certainly wouldn't be surprising if he does stick for long stretches of the season there.
It would be 0% surprising if Hoglander was just the best of that class of, like, middle six aspirant winger that this team has. Very much like I think at some point Connor Garland's going to force his way off the third line.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he's going to be too good to keep his ice time that low. That's just my view. So I think Hoglander's a good bet to similarly see his role expand. Anyway, that $3 million, when you've done a bunch of short-term contracts, right, and it matches Dakota Joshua's, so there's almost like a slotting in now, right? This team is built around Pettersson and Miller, clearly, right? DeBrusk is signed long-term. Besser's not, but effectively you've got two other top six forwards making, you know, 5-6-ish. You've got Joshua and Hoglander both at three, And then you've got a long list of players who are kind of like auditioning in some ways over the course of the next year or two to be that guy to sort of bolster that like Hoglander Joshua spot for this lineup. So it's not just about Hoglander getting the deal. It's also that you've created a roadway with which to follow should a player like Arshdeep Bains pop, right? I mean, Arshdeep Bains is last year of his ELC, right? So we know it's going to be a two-year deal. We know it's going to be a two-year deal one way, okay? And then what comes next if he keeps improving the way he has?
And also it's...
Aturatu, same story.
It's getting it done well in advance, right? So it's like, we're not going to take you to arbitration here. We're going to work... You've done enough that we have faith in you. We're going to make this commitment. And it's part of... It's like almost a mini version of like the Tampa thing that you talk about a lot, right? Where it's like, we're really going to grind you, but then we're going to take care of you. Now, it's a much smaller stakes situation, right? But it's like, again, as you said, it's a template where we're going to give you this two-year deal, give you an opportunity to take that next step. If you do take the next step, this is what it looks like.
Yeah, I know that the Gilman Gillis axis used to refer to it as the covenant, the covenant between players and management that we take care of you. This is how we do things, right? And the Lightning have gotten their players to buy into it. It's allowed them to, you know, be like the only team that successfully utilized bridge deals in the last 10 years, frankly, right? The Canucks are sort of still beginning to shape it. We're still at the start of what this process looks like, which is why the Hoglander deal for me, honestly, almost like signals a new phase of team building for the Canucks in a variety of different ways, right? Like, in part, I think it does something that the club was deeply reluctant to do last year, which is that it locks in upside before it's realized, right? Last year, this team was built sharply, but also as a hedge position, right? Everything was short term. Players they acquired were expiring. Players they signed were mostly to one-year deals, with Pugh Suter being the exception. Their existing players. Pettersson went to February, unextended. Hronek wasn't extended until, right before free agency. In trying to get deals done with their various unrestricted free agents before the playoffs, they only got a deal done with Podkolzin, who they later traded. Blueger. The bulk of talks with Lindholm and Zadorov, even though those came to naught. Myers, Joshua, those were all done in like the waning hours, like the week before the market opened. This organization wanted things to be short term, and we've seen a change from that, right? We've seen them sign a big deal for a big long term deal with DeBrusk, right? Myers, the commitment's long term. Joshua, the commitment's long term.
Pettersson and Hronek going 8 years, right? And like aggressively,
max term. So now we're in this different phase of sort of team building, a more confident phase. And while they'd done long-term deals with some of those guys were pending unrestricted free agents or actual unrestricted free agents. Hoglander is a guy who had no impetus to get done now, right? Mm-hmm. This is a proactive move.
Yep.
This is a team capturing possible upside, gambling to capture that possible upside, based on a projection of what he could be if he continues to improve. Yeah, you buy an unrestricted free agent year. You buy two arbitration-eligible campaigns. Hoglander's third contract could have been, not scary, but like something to be mindful of from a cap planning perspective. Certainly, if he'd played 15 minutes a night this season and had another 25-goal season, like, yeah, damn, that guy's going to get paid in arbitration.
Yep.
This makes it a lot cozier and creates this slot, this like $3 million, 3 or 4 years of term for our contributing middle six guys. That's what we pay, right? That's what we're out here on offering players. And doesn't that make a lot of sense to have as a template, not just for your Baines and Ratu level contributors, but Heinen, Sherwood, Heinen and Sherwood with their 2 year deals and Sprong with his 1 year deal, right? It's like, hey, whether this is a contract year for you or not, perform to a certain level this season, and this is the sort of deal that's on the table. This is the sort of thing we can offer to players that slot into our lineup a certain way. There's a pathway here that's actually pretty holistic and evident, and I think we've seen just some of that like holistic, professional, thoughtful approach to team building matched with sort of how this organization's done contracts take sort of fuller shape or be more fully expressed with everything from how this club assembles their young stars lineup to The opportunities given to guys like Elias Pettersson and Lekera Mäki at training camp, right? Consistent with actually what we saw at Rick Tocchet's first training camp, too, where younger guy gets slotted up the lineup to open camp. Those guys get a real shot. Vets are challenged to be put into leadership positions, right? Like, there's a learning element, a challenge element to sort of everything that they're designing here that, you know, honestly, I actually find quite impressive. And is obviously a massive departure from some of what we've seen in the past.
And with the Höglander, as you talk about the covenant between players and management as well, I do think the backstory, and you could apply this to Dakota Joshua as well, ultimately getting the deal, right? But both players who were challenged by the coaching staff and by management, right? Nils Höglander being sent down to the AHL. Now, part of that, I know, understand too, you know, in the Bruce Boudreau era was, this is just such a mess. We don't want our young players up here necessarily, but still it's it was a challenging move for a player who had already played a ton of NHL games. Dakota Joshua, of course, not coming into camp in the shape the team wanted last year. And then both of those players put in the work. They respond to the challenge. They're rewarded with, first of all, opportunity and ice time, and then ultimately a contract as well. And so, again, you put yourself in Ratu or Baines' shoes, right? If one of them gets sent down today, that's probably going to be a pretty tough thing to take. But you can also see from the example of a Nils Höglander, like, hey, if the team sends you down to the AHL and says, work on X, Y, and Z, they're not blowing smoke. If you work on X, Y, and Z and you improve, they're going to take it seriously. They're going to give you the chances that follow from that, and they're ultimately going to reward you, assuming it, you know, there's space in the lineup and all of that. So I think that's a big takeaway for me from this Höglander deal is, as you said, just kind of that agreement, that pathway, that template for what it looks like for players coming into the organization and trying to duplicate what Nils Höglander has done, now earning that $9 million extension with the team. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and lots of excitement coming in for the Nils Höglander contract extension. One person does text in, does the Höglander deal, impact the Brock Besser negotiations? And I just think they're a different tier of player, right? So you can look at it and say, well, all of a sudden now, next year on the wings, they have Jake DeBrusk, Connor Garland, Dakota Joshua, Danton Heinen, Nils Höglander, already all locked up, Kiefer Sherwood as well. But when you talk about it in terms of contract slots, I don't think any of that prohibits them getting something done with Brock Besser, right? Like, those are all middle six or below, or even bottom six in a lot of case, salary contracts that they have on the books. I don't think that prevents you from going out and signing someone you think can be on your first line going forward, if that's what they decide about Brock Besser.
Yeah, I don't see them being tied together in any way, shape, or form. I think the governing factor between the caution on Besser, or the fact that there haven't been talks that have been too robust to this point, at least last I checked in on it, which was, you know, I guess 10 days ago. Once you get into the meat of training camp, it's like, I'm not going to...
You stop checking in on things constantly?
Well, yeah. Just things like that. That's like an off-season storyline, and at some point I'll check in on it during the campaign. But I think the governing cause for this to be sort of in tap the brakes mode, not slam the brakes mode, but tap the brakes mode, is how do you value a 40 goal scorer who's only done it once, right? How do you value and pay? Because the gap between what you pay a 40 goal scorer and a 30 goal scorer is massive. The gap between what you pay a 25 goal scorer, like Besser never hit the 30, went off for 40. I think there's some trepidation, as there always is when teams are making long-term investments in players, about, okay, you've done it once, but can you do it again? Like, is this what you are, or is this how you played once, right? This was a factor in why things went slowly with Dakota Joshua too, right? Now, I think ultimately there's a lot of desire on both sides for this relationship to continue, despite the fact that it's had some ups and downs over the course of the last few years, well documented. I don't think it's a hot take to say stuff like that. So it's not something I'm concerned about. It's not something that I think the Höglander extension by any means impacts. But, you know, we do have to be aware of the spiking Oliver Ekman-Larsson buyout cost, right? And then also you're going to have still the Mikheyev retention on the books, the team's going to have $5 million in dead space or so. We'll see how much cap growth there is, and then we'll see how Besser performs. But I would expect the Hoglander deal to have zero impact. As I said, I think the Canucks are slotting in middle six. They're creating this like tier of middle six contributor that makes something like $3 million. I think there's a much greater impact on, for example, if the team decides to take a run at retaining Pugh Suter or Daniel Sprong beyond this season. I think the Hoglander deal would impact those valuations and those decisions far more than it would Brock Besser.
Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports update all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJ, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds, find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. Jeremy Swayman finally signs that big extension in Boston. We will talk to NHL reporter Sarah Sivian about that, about some other stories around the league, and a cool new project that Sarah's launching today as well. So we'll chat about that next with Sarah Sivian right here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com.
Let's bring in Sarah Sivian.
Why did you request to do it? That's my job.
I'm just really excited to ask the first question, okay?
Hello, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hello. Wow, I feel so welcome. How are you guys?
We are so stoked to have you. Okay, I really want to ask you something. I don't think it like matters that much necessarily that an organization be like player friendly or what have you. I mean, it does matter, but you know, I just want to understand what's going on in Boston. How is it possible that this organization has yet to send a thank you graphic on Twitter to Yuri Patera?
Yep, that is at the height of everybody's mind.
The Yuri Patera considerations were front of mind, I'm sure, for the Bruins front office when they were talking to Jeremy Swayman over the weekend. So, I mean, that deal finally gets done, and it's it ends up being, what, $2 million more than the famous $64 million figure quoted by Cam Neely. So is this all water under the bridge? Is like, how much work do you think there's going to be to repair the relationship between Swayman and the team after the very public standoff we witnessed?
It's so interesting, right? Because you guys know that there are layers to who he is communicating with and interacting with at the team on a day-to-day basis. Like, they posted a TikTok immediately after they got it done with him laughing with the "I'm not bleeping leaving" thing from Wolf of Wall Street, right? Like, that was important publicly, as silly as it is, to show that they are still, like, smiling and laughing through it all over there. I don't know. But at the same time, I don't know. Swayman has been a really interesting figure with negotiations. Like, when he went to arbitration last year, he publicly went on a podcast and was talking about how displeased he was and how he took everything personally. I can't imagine he's thrilled that they're getting it wrong in the media in a snarky way. Like, that was just completely unacceptable, of course. But it's also, you're going to see this more and more with the rising of the cap and with different positions setting different markets. I think he wanted to act as sort of a figure to set the goalie market, especially ahead of Shesterkin, and like with Saros already getting done and Hellebuck getting done. It's just kind of, I think he thinks goalie should rein in more money, and he had the opportunity to kind of set that market. So I think both sides, it's fair play, but I don't think the public way the Bruins went about it got it wrong is acceptable at all.
With the idea of sort of protecting the market for goaltenders, Sarah, I find this fascinating because we've seen in other sports the devaluing of certain positions, especially where performance can be like fragile, doesn't last very often or very long, where injuries mount, where teams have multiples. And, you know, if the backup comes in and outperforms the starter, we're not very surprised, much like with like running backs in football. Right. And all of a sudden, no one pays a running back. Do you think goalies have to be
unique?
Yeah.
No,
please.
Unique in this position with the leverage that Swayman had, that it was also public. Again, you had Ullmark leaving before they even got the deal done. It's kind of, think about, put yourself in that shoes. It's a slap in the face thinking, oh, we'll get it done. Like, no worries. Meanwhile, Swayman's twiddling his thumbs worrying. Like, I think the Ullmark of it all was huge. And then the way that the Bruins have been able to succeed with like half a four center, like they didn't have a first or second line center at all. And now they do, but they had Ullmark and Swayman, and now they only had Swayman, and he had such unique leverage that I think it was really important that he set the market as he did.
So Sarah, how overall now with this out of the way, how do you see the Bruins shaping up against the rest of the Eastern Conference this season?
And it's funny because Korpisalo, I mean, he wasn't off to a great start in the preseason. I saw this meme on Twitter that was like, suddenly became busy at work and it's ruining my life. And it was a picture of him. It's going to be tough without going from the best tandem in the league to a tandem scorned and one half of it not even there anymore. So that's going to be interesting. You got the return of the Panthers, which is going to be, of course, elite. I'm feeling really good about the Leafs this year, unfortunately. And I just think it's such a stacked division. Everybody's better. And then you look at, I mean, you got Zadorov, you got Lindholm, but you know, it's hard to criticize the Bruins when you see what they've done in the regular season the past few seasons. But I do think the downturn starts now. You heard it here first.
Well, I hear it every year. Sarah, I find the Bruins' black magic to be one of the most fascinating things in hockey. Every year, I'm like, oh man, Tuukka Rask, such an underrated part of what they did. I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain it without elite goaltending. I'm not sure Linus Ullmark's the answer. And then, boom, they have the best tandem in hockey immediately. Patrice Bergeron, mm-hmm. I'm like, man, that guy's not just a player. He's a coach. Like, no way they're going to do it without him, especially with, like, Charlie Coyle, who's better on the wing, and Pavel Zacha, who's a third liner. Pavel Zacha's a 50-point guy. They're totally fine. Like, this team defies all logic.
It's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of, I think, to your point of undervaluing positions. The goaltending, like, it's as simple as the goaltending being the best tandem, the most consistent, and ushering that in. And also, I think people sleep on Marchand. I mean, finally, he gets his time to make a statement, and he does. And Pasternak's one of the top three wingers in the league. It's like, I think we're so used to this and so spoiled by these people that we don't realize how, yeah, even when parts of the team are falling apart, they're always going to hold it down.
Yeah, there's no doubt. They've had an incredible run of top talent performing. I mean, you throw in like Charlie McAvoy on the blue line, right? So as much as they've lost all of this talent, they still have the core of Marchand, Pasternak, Charlie McAvoy, and, you know, now with Swayman locked up long-term as well. You know, you mentioned just the strength of that division, and really top to bottom, it looks pretty formidable. You mentioned you like the Leafs. Is this the year you think that they could finally break through and do some real damage in the playoffs?
Because there's pressure that actually matters. Like, it's not, oh, we play in Toronto, oh, we're cursed because we can't get out of the first round, even though it's great to get in the first round at all, as with a league with such parity. Like, I think they can get out of their heads now because it is the last year with all of their contract situations, because Marner's likely gone, and who knows, if he's not, they got to figure that out and somebody else has to go. So it really is, they put their money where their mouth is with making Matthews captain, and I was clowning on that at first, but then I saw what Tavares actually had to say about it, and I'm like, you know what, I'm kind of buying in, this is legit. Then you got Berube, he's actually a veteran presence of a coach that has led to success, and he's kind of hard-nosed, but he's a guy everybody loves to play for in that way. So I think that's the like exact perfect coach for them. And I do think it's like pressure that they can actually do something with. Like, it feels like this is it for real.
So, Sarah, one thing that concerns me a little bit, small C concern about this upcoming Canucks season, is that I feel like they're betting against the Bruins' black magic, to come back to this theme. Zadorov and Lindholm land in Boston. Canucks are betting on Forbert, Heinen, DeBrusk in Vancouver. What can you tell us about what Canucks fans should expect from the three new Bruins wearing Canucks colors, or the three ex-Bruins wearing Canucks colors this upcoming season?
It's made absolutely no sense to me, frankly, that Heinen was on a PTO at one point. He's always been such a sound, sturdy player at a reasonable cost, who is an extremely hard worker, who's hard on himself and like doesn't let himself have multiple bad games in a row, if that makes sense. He's not going to like blow you away on special teams, but he's one of the, his analytics at even strength check out. Like, he's one of the most sturdy guys at even strength when it comes to being able to get, break out of a team rut and get that one goal that like is a backbreaker that you really need. He can do that for you. He can be a reinforcement when it's like that stage of the season where everybody kind of knows your tricks. He's the ace. DeBrusk is my favorite forechecker in the league. I just love his effort. He's never going to, he might make a mistake because he's working so hard, but he's never going to let you down with the effort. And I think that reminds me kind of the heart and soul that the Canucks need, and what they've kind of found last year was kind of the vibe check of the intangibles, if you will. But DeBrusk is electric. Even if he has his days, he's going to bounce back and he's going to perform in the playoffs. That's what I love about him. Big goals.
So DeBrusk, DeBrusk.
I'm not like thrilled about it. I just had forgotten Forbert, which kind of is how I feel about him. I think if you need somebody to kill a penalty, which everybody in the NHL should be able to do, he can do that for you. He's a serviceable blue line. Like, I don't know. That's what they say. And I think I want to be nice because I really like him as a person.
Yeah.
I don't think he really did the Bruins any favors, but I do think when other players are injured, he can step up and provide you with like a deep playoff run type vibe. He's not going to make too many mistakes.
Sarah, I'm throwing a curveball at you just because I think it's fun. Can we talk about things that people say that sound like compliments about hockey players but are actually really mean? Can we talk about this? Because I've got two off the top of my head. First of all, serviceable is in the Hall of Fame. He's a serviceable third pair defenseman.
No, but that's baked in as like a backhanded compliment.
It is a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
And then here's another one that I think people are like less wise to. Intriguing. When you call a prospect intriguing, it really means they've done absolutely nothing. Like, oh yeah, no, he's an intriguing young player. It's like, absolutely. You never want to be intriguing. You want to be like, oh man, he's sick. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you want people to be excited about you, not like intrigued.
Not intrigued.
Yeah, like intrigued is someone, it's like, oh, I got an intriguing text message. I'm not going out, but I got one. I got an invite to an intriguing party I'm absolutely not attending.
Like, I guess I'm listening, and it's the easiest thing to say, right, for a prospect, because if you're wrong, nobody remembers it, but there's not a comparable. You're not a real prospect in my eyes until you're getting a ridiculous comparable. That's what it takes.
Yeah, until someone drops a Wayne Gretzky comp for literally no reason because you did something cool in the preseason. John Taylor. No, but
if you're Russian, you better be the next Ovechkin.
Do you got any others? What are things we say about hockey players that are actually kind of mean if you think about it?
Putting
obviously you on the spot.
Good in the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
Good in the locker room.
Yeah.
Big.
Red flag.
God, how do people speak about, I'm trying to think.
I like the one, too, where people are like, he's got good speed for a man his size. It's like, so he's slow. Like, I don't know what to tell you. No one says that about Parayko. They're just like, he's a really fast skater.
Oh, look at that, especially like, for his size.
He can play with the best players. He can keep up line. I know that's a big discourse. It's like, yeah, I think that's where I'd want to be playing. That's what they were saying about Hyman, about David, too. It's like, yes. Personally, that's the number one person I'd want to be my center.
Hello.
I think you get a lot of like, this guy won't hurt you as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The forward experience. That's what it's going to be. I'm sorry.
Won't hurt you. Won't kill you to have you have him in the lineup. It's like, wow, all right. I'd be really worried if he was going to kill you. That's just like having him in the lineup.
That's like, it won't kill me to have my weird cousin at a family event. I don't actually have a weird cousin. I want to be clear. My cousin's Rock. But like, you know, it's a relatable thing, I'm sure, for somebody.
Yeah, okay.
somebody else out there has weird cousins.
Sorry for twisting this interview with a preposterous curveball. What's the hype level like for Lindholm and Zadorov in Boston? Or, Sarah, is this widespread skepticism about the Bruins' ability to maintain their dark magic hold over the Atlantic Division widespread in Boston at the moment?
You'll excuse us if we were a little preoccupied with Swayman around here, but
fair.
I think it's like nothing but hype for Zadorov, and it's like, you know, Bruins fans love a tall, serviceable, if you will, defenseman who can skate for his size, and they like personality.
He's an intriguing fit.
With Zadorov rounding the crew out, it's the tallest, meatiest. I don't know exactly how we're quantifying meaty. I think maybe like weighing the most blue line in the NHL, which is like, for Bruins fans, that's winning the cup. Like, they want to go back to the big bad Bruins age. And Zadorov is just an absolute character, which we also like around here. So I think people are going to find excuses for him no matter what he does. And I think Lindholm, they just need an above serviceable center. So that's going to be a win no matter what. I've loved watching Lindholm play for the Canes and the Canucks, and it's just, and I mean, not the Flames, I hear, but if he can get back to a season like he had under Rod Brind'Amour, like, everybody's going to be thrilled with him, and I think he could have it in him. It's just whatever the Flames are doing over there, it takes people years to bounce back, so maybe this is the year.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had pretty good runs, playoff runs with the Canucks. So maybe they, you know, getting out of Calgary, having that experience with the Canucks, and they'll go on to do great things for Boston. Sarah, I, before we let you go, I do want to ask you, I think one of the big talking points around the NHL this preseason has been the preseason itself and just the incredible number of injuries and how long it goes, how little people care. I mean, I believe it's been canceled because of the weather down in Florida and the potential hurricane, but there was even supposed to be one scheduled tonight between Nashville and Tampa, like a day before the regular season opens. What is it time finally that we're going to see some preseason reform, some preseason changes going forward here?
Yeah, the preseason is canceled by the woke media such as me. I wrote a article about that today on my new Substack, which I'm going to plug. It's called The Civ Report.
Please do.
Let's go.
So check out my thoughts there. But I will tell you right now, I saw Pierre LeBrun reported that they want, there's like a motion to talk about in the next CBA to reduce it to 4 games and make the season 84 games. I don't really think we need to make the regular season any longer, but if it means the preseason is less of it, then I am very on board with that. I think the amount of injuries and the brevity of injuries with Line A, you've got even Celebrini, it's just such a damper on getting excited for the season, and then the amount of it really is like, okay, the hype's over. I do think, with that being said, 4 games is the perfect amount to have like fringe roster players out there and see what they're like in a real game. That's all you need. I know several coaches at this point have expressed to me how sick they are of it and how they want to not put like NHL caliber players in there, but sometimes there's some pressure when it's like a player coming from a trade, or it's people are paying games to go paying money to go see these games, right? So you don't want to totally not give them an experience, and sometimes you want to get the rust off, but 4 is the golden number where you can put the stars out for 1 game. Nobody's at total risk of getting hurt, and you don't see what you see with a Line A or like a Joker's trying to get in the lineup doing hitting star players, because it's just, it's getting ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, I think as long, like the 84 games, I agree. I don't know that we need to go longer, but as long
let's solve one problem by exacerbating another.
As long as they're plugged on to the beginning of the season, right? Like the season starts earlier rather than running longer. That's my number one concern with that. We don't need to be taking the season even longer into April before we get the playoffs going. So like, let's try to start things.
It was so weird that it started in Prague and it's like later that night, there's preseason games.
Yeah.
I think start the regular season when it is. You can just do it then. And end the preseason, and we're golden.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you mentioned it quickly there, but I wanted to give you a chance just to tell us a little bit more about the Civ report. As you said, new project you're launching today. What do we need to know about it?
Oh, yeah, thanks so much. I am blown away by the support already. I can't believe anybody would pay U.S. or Canadian dollars or wherever you're from to support me the way people have so far. I really want to just... What I miss the most about, somewhere, like working somewhere like The Athletic, it's the community and the comments and the live chat and also the connection you get there. It's like it used to be, Myrtle would call it the best comment section in the world because you could have a chat about sports as Twitter was rapidly deteriorating. And now we've reached peak deterioration of Twitter where it's really getting me down lately. It's not about me. I can handle it sometimes. Like I can take the brunt of people being...
jerks.
Crazy, harassing, gross people. But when it starts to be, you can't have a conversation with like-minded folks and you're getting horrible things on purpose for rage bait by the people who are subscribed or whatever it is, you know, it's just the vibes are completely terrible to the point where I dread logging on to Twitter. So I just want to create more of a community group chat type feel somewhere else where we can watch some of the games together. I'm not sure exactly what the nebulous group chat's going to be yet. So people are doing intros in there now, and I'm going to do a weekly long form newsletter talking about whatever's going on in the league and kind of what's going on in sports. Cause I think at the heart of sports is community. And I just really miss that aspect is everything's being monetized and made worse by rich people.
Sarah, that's That's awesome. And
let's go. I'm fired up.
Well, and I totally understand you because I'll tell you, like, my favorite thing about my job is, you know, we text back and forth with the listeners. They text in. They get to communicate with each other through our show, right? And it's, as you said, it's feeling like part of that community, which is such a major part of being a sports fan, of watching and enjoying sports. So that sounds awesome. And again, it is the Civ report on Substack launched today. Everyone can go check that out.
I'm with you, too. I'm spending way less time on Twitter engaging in conversation with Canucks fans than I have at any point in my career. It's gotten really unusable from the perspective of just like engaging with consumers, like-minded people. It's really too bad. So best of luck, Civ. We'll be subscribing and we'll have you back soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Talk soon.
That is Sarah Sivian, who, again, just launched the Civ Report on Substack, freelance NHL reporter, weighing in on Boston's situation and some other stuff around the NHL.
Now, you've always hated Twitter.
What I've learned about myself is I'm not a social media person. Like, I don't have, and I use Twitter as an information source, although it's certainly become much less useful over the last few years in that regard, right? Obviously, I stay...
I still think it's got that. That's the problem.
It has that. It's not as good. It still has that. It's still the best place for it, which is why I still use it, right? I've never been like a post a lot, interact, like people's posts, retweet, comment, all that. That's just like not my instinct. When I see a funny thing on Twitter, my natural instinct is to scroll past it. My natural instinct is not to like interact with it. I'm like, oh, that's funny. And then I keep scrolling. Whereas some people are like, oh, that's great. I'm going to engage with this. I'm going to like build a relationship or whatever. For whatever reason, that's just not me. So I don't know. Like, I don't have Instagram. I'm just not a social media person. I wouldn't say I hate Twitter. It's the social media I use the most, but primarily it's just for like staying up to date on things. What information is happening? What have the Canucks done? All of those sorts of things rather than engaging and interacting with people. So if I ever ignore your tweets on Twitter, I'm sorry for that.
I mean, for me, it used to be like the main place I wanted to have conversations with colleagues, with readers, with listeners, with everybody. And increasingly, I just find it like somewhat unusable for that. So
now it's group chats, huh?
Yeah, it's group chats, it's Discords, it's on and on, right?
But it's crummy, but it has to be like invite based, though. You know what I mean? Like, what
it, it, is crummy, but also I think that's like the natural evolution of a more fragmented media landscape, right? I mean, to me anyway, I don't know that I don't know that I have the answer so much as what I do know is that I don't want to spend as much time in my mentions and I don't. And
your
I
re- mentions
can't imagine why.
And I regret that. No, I regret that because for all the, you know, times people have said something mean to me, there's a lot of interesting insight that like Canucks fans have that I feel like I'm struggling to access in the way I used to. So I don't know, just an evolution in how we're consuming sports.
Well, now you've got the inbox.
That's true. And the inbox rocks.
I love the inbox. It's great. I'm not joking. I'm not sucking up. It's great.
Yeah. We get awesome stuff into the 650
and angry Dunbar people. Lumber, that's fine. Line.
And also angry people.
Yeah. That's fine. That's part of sports. Yeah. Part of sports is being angry.
I like when someone gets angry and sends us like 12 angry texts in a row, because that's how I know we're having a good show.
That's when they're really locked in. One, two, three. No, it's not enough text. Yeah. I got to go all the way to 12. Okay, speaking of the text message inbox, we got one final segment coming up here. So you can send in your questions, comments, angry thoughts that you might have. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We are just over half an hour away from the roster deadline in the NHL. Haven't seen any official Canucks news, any official Canucks releases, but we will keep you posted. Hopefully we get something before we go off the air and we can react to that. As a reminder, Patrick Alvin will speak to the media at 2:30 today, so he'll weigh in on the transactions they made yesterday, the final decisions they make here on roster deadline day as well. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz live from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love.
Just want to shout out the inbox, which we were complimenting before.
Yep.
Had some awesome suggestions from the last segment of things we say about hockey players that sound like compliments but aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Cup pedigree.
Yes.
The pedigree and the cup mixed. Stanley Cup pedigree, which means you were just on a team that won and didn't help.
Yeah. You were. It's true, because if you're an elite player who won a cup, people are just like, well, he's an elite player. It's not like he has a Stanley Cup pedigree.
Yeah.
Like nobody, like Jake Guentzel, it wasn't like Stanley Cup pedigree. It was like he's Jake Guentzel. You know what I mean?
Well, or people say it more generally, like he shows up in big games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas like for Jay Beagle, it's like won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Toolsy
is such a good one.
From Vancouver Island.
Toolsy also, we can talk about it in a hockey context, but it triggers me so much in baseball because it's just like
Travis Snyder.
So you can't hit. Well, Travis Snyder, what?
He was toolsy. All,
don't slander Travis Snyder. I was a massive toolsy. Travis Snyder guy. He wasn't that toolsy, though. Travis Snyder's not like a freak athlete. Travis Snyder could hit in the minors. He just didn't hit in majors. Toolsy is like, he's so fast and he's long and his frame is going to fill out, but he can't actually hit. He strikes out all the time.
I'm going to age myself too, but there was this like mold of prospect in the age of social media where like your access to their highlights and like their progression through the minor leagues was like new to you.
Yeah.
As someone who was using Twitter and on social media. And so fans like really gravitated to prospects of that era, glommed onto them in this like parasocial sort of way. Travis Snyder was that for Blue Jays fans. Like, Travis Snyder is to Blue Jays fans what Cody Hodgson was for Canucks fans.
As somebody who was really into both of those players, I can attest to that.
Yeah, right? Like,
I still follow Travis Snyder on Twitter. That's how long I've been holding the flame for Travis Snyder.
Does he still eat hot dogs and stuff?
Yeah, he does.
Good guy in the room, says Tyler. Yeah, 100%. To me, 200-foot player means zero offense. I disagree with that. I tend to mean 200-foot player means, like, a offensive player who
safe defensively, I think, often is like, so he doesn't do anything.
Like, Neil Zaman is a 200-foot player. Ouch. Yeah, I mean, fair. I think it definitely does get used that way sometimes. We throw two-way around a little too much when sometimes we do really mean one-way.
One-way, and it's the defensive way. Yes.
Usually.
Okay, we do have some breaking news here. So the roster deadline is coming up in 25 minutes. The Canucks have made their final roster maneuvers, and as we speculated earlier in the show, Archdeep Baines has been assigned to Abbotsford along with Yuri Patera and Eric Brandstrom, who, of course, Yuri Patera, they reclaimed on waivers from the Bruins. They were the only team to put in a claim, so they can send him directly to Abbotsford. Eric Brandstrom clears waivers after he was acquired from Colorado and put on waivers yesterday. And then Dakota Joshua and Thatcher Demko put on season-opening injured non-roster,
which, as I was joking last week, right, is understood by Central Registry and God.
So I'm not even going to, like, is there any meaningful way in which that's different than in IR?
No. Yeah. No, the distinctions based on whether a player was injured while on the team's active roster, right? If they're hurt while active, they're injured reserve. Otherwise, they're injured non-roster. Injured reserve players count against the cap. In injured non-roster cases, it depends on a few factors. But in Joshua and Demko's case, you know, the fact that they're long-serviced guys on one-way deals, et cetera, means that this is effectively IR, but just a variation of it because they're entering the season injured. That's the best I can do.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. If you want to look it up, 16.11 says the section of the CBA, you can pick over it with a fine tooth comb.
And why wouldn't
let me
you
know if you figure it out.
So does it, but that comes with the same minimum time on IR that normal IR does. I'm putting you on the spot here, I realize.
Sorry,
right? Like the season opening, does it come with the
I don't think it's relevant because I don't think either player's return is imminent.
Yeah.
So I don't know the exact answer. How about this? I'll study up tonight.
You do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to assign you homework.
I should have probably just known that injured non-roster was a probability. I mean, we've been talking about it for the last week, but mostly,
I mean, I can't imagine it matters.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No.
But anyways, that's the case. So Archdeep Baines, really the final cut from the Canucks roster, and that means both, we knew Neil Zaman was on the team, but Atu Ratu has broken camp with the team, and based on how they've lined up in practice, I mean, I guess it will depend on Connor Garland's availability, MPU Suter's availability, but it seems like there's a pretty good chance that not only does he break camp with the team, but that he is in the lineup for opening night on Wednesday against Calgary, potentially centering that third line with Nils Höglander and maybe Connor Garland if he's healthy. Now, that doesn't necessarily be the case, right? If Pugh Suter is healthy, they could roll with Suter and Bluger down the middle, have Amon on the wing, but based on Ratu's ability to stick at center, his ability to win faceoffs, the reverse faceoff maneuver on his offside on the right-hand side, I would put fairly decent odds that he's actually in the lineup against Calgary. And man, we were talking about the commendable effort from both Baines and Ratu early in the show to even be in this at this point, to be forcing the Canucks to make this decision. For Atu Ratu in particular, what a fantastic accomplishment for him at this stage of his career to break camp and go into the season on the NHL roster.
Sorry, someone comments that energy guy and second fastest hockey player without the puck on the planet was used in reference to Ilya Mikheyev by someone on this show. We are not retconning me as being high on Ilya Mikheyev, by the way. No chance. But still want to defend the guy. We never really saw him at full
speed. We never saw full speed Ilya Mikheyev.
I suspect we might see it this season, and I don't actually think that's something that Canucks fans should lament. Anyway, sorry, Atu.
Ratu. Not just breaking team or breaking camp with the team, but I think he's got a pretty good shot to be in the lineup on Wednesday against Calgary.
Yeah, I think you're probably comes
down to Suter and Garland a little bit, I guess. But I think if everyone's healthy, I think probably it's Ratu between Hoglander and Garland on the third line.
Well, and if Suter gets back and not Garland, could we see Hoglander, Suter, Ratu?
Yep, absolutely, we could.
Because I think that's the other thing that I'm curious about is, you know, Suter's not a very good faceoff guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could Ratu push Suter to wing? That was always an option that would potentially get him on the team, right? Especially once he showed that mastery in the circle. So, and sort of demonstrated it repeatedly throughout the preseason, I think was the only regular Canucks center who played multiple games in the preseason who was above 50% in the dot. Coach is going to notice that, right? So, we'll sort of see where it goes, but yeah, look, Ratu's got a shot to be on to be in the opening night lineup. I do think it's worth noting too, like there's been, you know, some reporting, Darren Dreger, our friend Rick Dhaliwal sort of hinting at an extended or a more extended absence for Thatcher Demko here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mentioned it sort of offhand, like it doesn't seem like Joshua and Demko's returns are imminent, but you know, this could really be protracted too. Rick Tocchet, speaking to the media over the weekend, made it seem like Artur Shelovs was going to get the game in Calgary, but that probably they were looking at something of a job share through the first month of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd expect the club will eventually start riding a hot hand, depending on the performance of both goaltenders. But I think we all know what Demko means to this club when he's healthy, the difference in aura, vibe around this club when they're leading. Playing defense the way that they can under Rick Tocchet and have Demko in net. Like, it's, you know, a big ask for teams to claw back into games against this Canucks team when they're in that position with Shelovs and Lankinen. They should be fine. They should be able to play good enough defense to insulate those two players. Mm-hmm. But man, I'm a lot less certain about it, right? Like, I'm pretty confident in that Lankinen's an average goaltender, but average goaltenders can have bad months, right? I don't know what Artur Shelovs is. I remain a little bit concerned by the gap between perception of Shelovs as, you know, this super promising young goaltender and the fact that at no point has he sustained elite performance, right? Like, as much as, and we had Woodley on and had this conversation last week, right? As much as Woodley doesn't look at save percentage, like, it's interesting to me that the goalies who go on to be stars tend to have really good numbers
percentages
at lower levels, right? Like, for the most part, the goalies who are really good stop shots at an above average clip at every level on their way up. So, you know, I do think it remains a question mark going into the season and one for which we still don't have real answers, right? We still don't have a real timeline, and it'll be fascinating to see if Alvin updates us on that. I just wanted to spend a second on it because it does seem to me to be sort of the biggest lingering question mark, even as we get what the Canucks opening day 23 men looks like.
And again, just I did mention it in the whiteboard, but Elliot Friedman on Donnie and Dolly today saying Joshua probably a few weeks away and then declined to really put an estimate on Thatcher Demko. So that backs up what you're saying, right? And Friedman said, look, the team is really going to take their time on Thatcher Demko. So again, to that point of, you know, we might not be talking end of October or beginning of November. It might be longer than that. That's the latest out there on Thatcher Demko. Okay, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, the Canucks have sent Arshdeep Bains down to Abbotsford, which means Atu Ratu begins the regular season with the team. And this question comes in response to that from Tyler, the Pepper guy in Chilliwack. What's the upside for Atu Ratu? And I think that's the next kind of logical question, right? Okay, you break camp with the team. We'll see if he gets in the lineup at least to start the season in the first game against Calgary. I think he's got a pretty good chance of doing it. And I think the other interesting aspect of this is if he is in the lineup, it's likely not going to be just in your kind of typical, hey, fourth line, go out there, don't make any mistakes, don't kill us out there, as they say, right? Play it safe, roll. There's a good chance that he's going to get an opportunity with Nils Hoglander, who the team just committed a three-year deal to, and Connor Garland, who is one of the team's best five-on-five offensive point producers, right? So he's going to be put in a position where he has a chance to perform, but also he's going to be expected to produce offensively. So that question of, okay, great, he's made the team. That's the box. That's the first box you got to check on your way to, you know, being an impact NHL player of some description. That's great. Now, what can he do, and how high can that upside be? And I'm going to be fascinated to see what it looks like with Ratu between Hoglander and Garland in real games. Again, as you said, Hoglander getting that spot next to Garland or alongside Garland on a line is a real vote of confidence. That's a hugely important line for Rick Tocchet. That third line, he really values it. He wants it to produce offense. And if Ratu can click with those guys right away, then all of a sudden, I think that upside gets that pretty interesting to consider for Ratu.
Yeah. And as a ceiling question, you know, it's tough. Like, Ratu's had a bit of a different development path than your average player because he played in the American League at 19.
Mm-hmm.
And played NHL games at both 19 and 20. Even though those games weren't like jump off the page impressive, there's signal in a player graduating to the pro ranks that at that sort of a precocious stage in their career and actually doing something, right? Like, he has two NHL goals in 15 games at the ages of 19 and 20. I mean, that's nothing to sniff at by any means. In the American League, you know, he had 80 points in 127 games, which is, you know, 0.63 points per game. That falls south of my usual 0.7 sort of rule of thumb for a top nine player. But that rule of thumb is usually to apply to like a 23-year-old player.
Yeah.
Who spent their age 21, 22 seasons in the American League. Ratu hasn't had his age 22 season yet, right? Like, that 0.63, but you do it at 19 and 20 is, you know, pretty impressive. You know, I think there's an outside shot still that he could be a top six guy, maybe even at center, like a second line center. I think that's in play, but I think the fatter part of the bell curve would be, you know, a third line center, or a middle six wing, depending on if his speed can play. Now, his ability to win draws might help him start in the middle. He does look like he figured some stuff out as a skater over the course of the offseason. I think that's a major reason why he's put himself in position to break camp with the team and maybe even be in the opening day lineup. However, you know, we'll see. Like, the fact that the organization wants to give him a long run at center doesn't mean that he won't end up on the wing long term over the course of his career, especially, you know, with really his feet and sort of defensive ability being key drivers that determine whether or not he sticks. I do think there's middle six upside for sure, though, here.
Yeah, that defensive part of the game is going to be fascinating, right? To see how much he's trusted, what positions he gets put in. Because if you're talking about
a
guy...
he had the tough read in the final preseason.
You know, if you're looking at, as you would say, like, most likely upside case here, and it's third line center, well, what do teams typically want their third line center to be? They want him to be defensively reliable and defensively responsible. Not a must. You see, like, offensively oriented third lines, but boy, it sure helps to sticking in the NHL in that role if you can be relied on in that way.
Totally. And so, you know, we'll sort of see exactly what the Canucks have here as this season unfolds, but a tremendous accomplishment. But by the way, some just like small things about the Canucks roster being set now that the club's announced an official opening day roster. You can still, the Canucks are full, so this doesn't really matter, but you can still recall guys, but you can't send a guy down until after you've played a game. So the Canucks roster is like partially frozen until, I guess, it might be actually before they play a game, might be end of day Tuesday or end of day Wednesday. But for a small window of time, the Canucks roster is partially frozen. They can call guys up. They can't send guys down for about 48 hours, just minor stuff that is actually, and I love to bring this up, is sort of a rule that was adopted by the NHL about 15 years ago in response to the Canucks' machinations during the 2011 season. The 2010, so October 2010, the Canucks opened the season with like Eddie Lack on the roster instead of Corey Schneider and Cody Hodgson on the roster, even though they had no intention of playing him. That they had like Peter Schaefer open the season as the fourth line center. And that was to, you know, maximize the like ELC capture from those two guys, and then they were sent down. before the Canucks had ever played a game in response to those shenanigans, that sort of loophole exploited by the Canucks of that time. The NHL's adopted this rule where you basically have to play a full game with your opening day roster.
So this is it. This
with
is
some
one
exclusions.
Going into game one against Calgary on Wednesday.
We had one texter note that they were a little surprised Baines didn't make it. They think he's got more value than Neil Zaman. This is Tanbeer. Damn. I hate when I fall for the Tanbeer trap. But I guess being a good penalty killer is very important to talk it. You know, I'm kind of with him. I hate this. I wish this wasn't Tanbeer. Hate when Tanbeer makes a good point. I'm kind of with him. Like, I do think there's more that Amon needs to show as a faceoff winner and as a guy who just, like, occasionally works the puck into more dangerous areas of the ice when the team's set up in zone. I think Baines has more ability to do that, most likely. But, like, this team's really high on Neil Zaman. We've seen it multiple times. Like, don't forget, right, that this team declined in advance of the deadline in a money in, money out environment to place Friedman and Amon on waivers so that they could, if they wanted to, right? Like, you don't have to send them down, but if they'd cleared, the club could have created some cap space with which to buy into. Instead, the club, having bought Lindholm early in the process, sort of stood pat, I guess, ahead of the deadline, in part because of how much they valued what Friedman and Neil Zaman could bring as depth contributors to the club. That to me is like signal, right? Like you have to, more than what an organization ever says, when an organization makes moves like that, they are, you know, screaming about how much they value those particular pieces. So Neil Zaman's a highly rated player. Neil Zaman, as I noted, was a high risk of being claimed. And so
that's a huge part of it, right?
Is huge part.
Yes, of course they value him, but the reason they value him is also he's a high risk. Like, other teams value that, all those attributes as well.
Totally.
That's why he would be a high risk to be claimed.
Yep.
And so maybe if it was if there was no waiver considerations, would it be Baines instead of Amon? I think maybe.
Possibly.
But I
don't even think so.
But the waiver thing to me makes it, I doubt it was that even that hard a decision.
Yeah. So what impact, if Ratu can stick at center and be a real depth option there, might that have on Neil Zaman as a
does it
Canuck
make
long-term?
Them willing to expose him to waivers at some point during the season if they have to,
or package him as part of a deal, right? Like that's sort of a question that I'll have, or something to monitor anyway as we go through here. Anyone, when you think about the cuts now that we're done, right, we've gone through weeks of sort of horse race content. Yeah. When really the battle...
It came down to
Baines
versus
Ratu
versus Baines.
Yeah, and that was kind of it.
Yeah. And it really didn't even come down to Neil Zaman, because as you said, like, we knew he was on the team yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? Because he wasn't put on waivers.
It's not like he was a standout performer in the preseason or training camp, right? Like, so he was just on the team. We kind of knew it. When you reflect on everything we've done and talked about, is there anything that you sort of take from preseason or any cuts that surprise you in retrospect?
The timing of the Phil DiGiuseppe one surprised me a little bit, that he didn't figure into the final battle for that last roster spot. That surprises me a little bit in retrospect. Nothing else. I mean, to be honest, like, Atu Ratu, obviously it falls under a surprise, but I don't think it's a massive surprise necessarily, right? Like, I think he always was going to be one of the two or three young forwards who had the best chance of actually doing this. The fact that he was able to stick at center ultimately probably is what gets him onto the roster to start the season. But, you know, certainly the defense, I mean, those are the eight guys that you would have drawn up to be the eight defenders,
100%.
Right? Without a doubt. And then, yeah, once we knew Dakota Joshua was, you know, on the shelf to start the season, we were talking about one extra forward spot. And I guess it would have been Phil DiGiuseppe I would have had in the lead. But not a massive surprise that Atu Ratu ends up beating him out, since he can play center. So I don't know. Anything that qualifies as a surprise for you?
I don't think so. I think the only things that surprised me were things like Kudryavtsev being a little more NHL ready than I would have expected. You know, the DiGiuseppe thing I'm curious about, because to bring this back to tie it full circle to the Avalanche Canucks conversation we were having in the first segment, regarding the Pullman trade and sort of the different priorities that illuminates, like, one thing the Canucks do is use them at the American League for development, right?
Yeah.
Having a DiGiuseppe type who can like absolutely give you NHL games and isn't an AHL player who can give you a few, but is like an NHL player, credible NHL player. I do think that's a boon for this team. Like, I think they need pieces like that. And I don't know that they actually have that many of them, to be totally honest with you. Like, outside of DiGiuseppe, I know people are posting like the loaded left side of like, is Willanen an NHL player or is he an AHL player who can give you some good games? Right? Like, do they have, is there another player in the American League that you'd sort of read that way? For me, it's kind of just DiGiuseppe. So I think that's a boon, something that this organization will benefit from having. I almost wish they had another defenseman for whom that actually really applied. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Lots more Canucks coverage coming up here. Bick Nizar on The People Show is up next. And as a reminder, Patrick Alvin, Canucks general manager, will be speaking to the media at 2:30. We will carry that live here, of course, on your home with the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.